when Krishna performed the rasa dance. He expanded himself into many Krishnas to dance with all the gopis. In Dwarka, in the morning, when the crow, not a crow, rooster would do whatever roosters do in the morning, make rooster noise. So it was time to wake up. That was their natural alarm clock. So Krishna would wake up and he would perform his morning devotional practice. He would meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means he would meditate on himself. And then, after his morning duties, all those 16,108 Krishnas would come together into one Krishna. He would enter into the assembly hall. Then after the assembly hall, he would expand himself into 16,108 Krishnas again. One Krishna, just he can expand himself however he likes. That's one kind of... There's so many different kinds of expansions. Then another kind is what Lord Kapila is. He's an expansion of Krishna who appears in the beginning of Satya Yuga to teach the means of achieving perfection in Satya Yuga. Do you know what Satya Yuga is? You know that there's four seasons. We're just into spring and kind of getting ready. It's the summer season. It's not ready yet. It's still cold. But then after spring comes summer. And after summer comes fall. And after fall, winter. And after winter comes spring. So like that, the seasons cycle. So the Vedic picture of time is that time also moves in cycles. Time moves matter. Time brings things into being, sustains them for some time, and time destroys everything. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, time destroys everything. So in those different ages of mankind, as there are four seasons, there's ages of mankind, and one of those ages, the first of the four, is called Satya Yuga. Satya means truth, goodness. So it's where goodness prevails and the means for achieving perfection is dhyana, meditation. So Lord Kapila is an expansion of Krishna who descends to teach the process for Satya Yuga. Means for achieving, the recommended means for achieving perfection in Satya Yuga. Meditation. Lord Kapila. And the purpose of this is just to give some picture for people who may not know who Kapila is, because we're going to speak about his teachings. He appeared as the son of Devahuti, that was his mother's name, and Kardama Muni, that was his father's name. But actually, he has no mother and has no father. He just performs a pastime to reciprocate with their particular affection towards God, like the affection of a parent towards a child. Actually, it's really the other way around. That meaning, in this world, there's mothers and fathers, and there's children. So parents have a natural affection for their children. It's completely natural. They don't have to go to school and learn how to have affection for their children. It's just natural. So biologically, it's natural, but this creation is a reflection of the spiritual world. Meaning, in the spiritual world, there is that same feeling. But it's a transcendental feeling because God isn't anyone's son. And nor are male and female the mother and father. So there's a transcendental emotion of parental affection that has its reflection in this world. This is a reflection of the spiritual world. So the pure affection of parent towards child is manifest when forms of the Supreme Lord descend, and it looks like something here. But we should bear in mind, it just looks like something here. There's a transcendental affection. So Kapila appeared as the son of Devahuti and Karnava Muni. This section that we're reading from is actually one of the whole description of Kapila Dev is one of the largest sections in the entire Srimad Bhagavatam, of course, next to Krishna's 10th canto. But it's a long section, which means it's important. So Devahuti, like the format for Srimad Bhagavatam is questions and answers throughout the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. It's very natural. And the Devahuti is asking questions of her son. She knows because Lord Brahma told her. Lord Brahma is her grandfather. Devahuti's father and mother is Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, the first of the 14 Manus. And Manu's direct father is Lord Brahma. So, granddad, Lord Brahma, told Devahuti when she was still pregnant, the child in your womb is the personality of Godhead. And you, so that means you, Mother Devahuti, have affection for your son that is pure. There's still motherly affection, but it's unmixed with any kind of material contamination. So she's engaged in some questioning to her son, who she knows is the personality of Godhead, how to overcome, go beyond, transcend the excessive attachment to the bodily conception of life, and with the bodily conception of life comes the whole of material existence. The I is the bodily conception, and the mind is those things that are extensions from the body. How do I overcome this? And that's a question that begins chapter 25. It's a little quick overview. And his answer is devotional service. And he describes what devotional service is. He describes how it begins. Very important section is the sadhu sangha section. It begins through association with sadhu. Sadhu means saintly person. Those who are attached to sat is a sadhu. So how to recognize a sadhu, how to associate with a sadhu, the steps of what was the benefit, what happens when you associate with sadhu, and devotional service unfolds. 25. After describing that, then there's two chapters that are describing Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya Yoga is also found in Bhagavad Gita. And the first part of Krishna's teachings to Arjuna, chapter 2, it's Sankhya. Krishna says that Sankhya. In verse 39, I describe Sankhya, and I'm going to describe Buddha Yoga. The Sankhya is what Kapila is primarily known for. Well, I mentioned one. He teaches the means of achieving spiritual perfection for Satya Yuga, meditation. So meditation on what? So meditation on spirit. So Sankhya is divisions of matter, divisions of spirit, we belong to the category of spirit, and we should meditate on the Supreme Spirit. That's chapter 26. It's really long, very complex. And then in chapter 27, still Sankhya, and then he teaches how you live your life when you have a spiritual conception of, I'm in the category of spirit, and I don't belong to the category of matter. How do you manage the matter side of life, and how do you stay focused on the spiritual side of life? And then, again, the same conclusion, fix your mind upon the Supreme. So we just covered three chapters. 25, 26, 27. And then 28 is, Kapila says, now I'm going to give you the details of how you fix your mind on the Supreme. And our acharyas, specifically Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, explains that the previous two chapters, it's Sankhya mixed with Bhakti. 28 is Ashtanga mixed with Bhakti, both of which are leading to pure Bhakti. What is Bhakti that's unmixed? That's where the train is headed. Get on board. We're going to pure devotional service. So in detail, it's fantastic. Meditation upon the Supreme. Before you begin the meditation upon the Supreme, you have to qualify yourself. So he describes the do's and the don'ts, yama and niyama, and what the purpose of them is. Then pranayama, asana and pranayama, the next two. When people go for yoga class, you know, they get off their yoga mat, and that they do the asanas, that's basically. And sometimes a little pranayama. They leave out the do's and the don'ts. They just, you know, feel good. Exercise. And then the next is pratyahara. All these are detailed in chapter 28. Withdrawing of the subtle senses, because in material existence or everyday life, we extend our capacity to see, hear, smell, touch, and those sensory inputs go to the mind and we process them, and so many things are going on. So pratyahara is to withdraw all of that, consolidate into a concentrated mind, and then three stages of concentration of mind up to the stage of samadhi. In that chapter 27, there's about 15 to 20 verses that are describing when the mind is concentrated, the form of the Lord that you fix upon. In details, it's fantastic. And then after, from the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord up through his different features of his transcendental Satchit Ananda body, it starts getting really personal. Not just his form, but then his smile, and then his laughter. He recommends, meditate upon his laughter. And that the happiness that he's feeling is something that the meditator can also experience, and enters into a state of great, great transcendental, ecstatic emotion, and to the point where there's nothing else in his mind. And in that nothing else in the mind, the kind of detachment that arises naturally by fixing one's mind upon the Supreme. Then he kind of backtracks and describes, when that's not there, what is the situation? One becomes attached to the bodily conception and to the mind conception and becomes entangled. So having heard all of that, now we're going to be discussing the first five verses of chapter 29. Chapter 29 is called Explanation of Devotional Service. The previous chapter is Kapila's Instructions on Devotional Service, and chapter 25 was Pure Devotional Service. So hint, Kapila Dev is actually teaching devotional service. So all these other procedures, the knowledge of Sankhya, the meditation of Ashtanga Yoga, they're means to achieve the end of pure devotional service. So at the beginning of chapter 29, that's what Devahuti asks. She asks about pure devotional service. You've described so many nice things. Can you now describe the details of pure devotional service? So because, in other words, before it was mixed, Sankhya mixed with bhakti, Ashtanga, yoga mixed with bhakti. Now what's just pure bhakti? And specifically, bhakti mixed with the modes, bhakti unmixed with the modes. Then she asks some other questions. So these are important questions. The whole rest of the chapter is responding to these questions. Kapila Dev is, when he responds to her questions, two things. The first verse, where he responds, is a summary verse, and it's right on target with what her question is. And then so many, sometimes a chapter or two follow that just expand on that essence. So it's really important to capture what her questions are. They're important to understand what the explanation is. They're also important for us. There are questions that we should be asking, so she asks them. And specifically, she explicitly says, it's not just for me, it's for everybody. I'm asking these questions. So, they're sutra-like. They're very terse and compact. But there's volumes within the question, and there's certainly volumes within the response. And second thing and last thing, I'll start reading the verses. What Kapila Dev is teaching in its simple form is in Bhagavad Gita, because Kapila is an expansion of Krishna. So Kapila is not going to say something that Krishna is not going to say. Kapila will say what Krishna says. But a little appreciation of the comparison between the two, using Prabhupada's words, Bhagavad Gita is the undergraduate study and Bhagavatam is the graduate study. So in math, 2 plus 2 is 4. And in algebra, 2 plus 2 is 4. In geometry, 2 plus 2 is 4. And calculus, 2 plus 2 is 4. And the however sophisticated you get with mathematics, 2 plus 2 is 4. So by studying Bhagavad Gita, we get the 2 plus 2 is 4. We get the undergraduate study. Now Bhagavatam is same as what Krishna teaches in Bhagavad Gita, says the graduate study. There's more detail. And the application of that detail is further presented. So if you have a little trouble following this, go back to the undergraduate study, read carefully Bhagavad Gita, understand its message, and then when you go to the Srimad Bhagavatam and hear Kapila's explanation of these things, specifically Sankhya mixed with bhakti and pure bhakti, you'll go, oh, that's what Krishna meant when he said this in Bhagavad Gita, and vice versa. It's 100% symmetry. Language is different. Detail looks different. But, you know, there's actually no difference, except one is further expanding the subject matter in Bhagavad Gita. So, chapter 29, text number 1. Devahuti said, Devahuti inquired, "My dear Lord," she's speaking to her son, my dear Lord. It's interesting because she has the affection of a mother, but she understands her son is the personality of Godhead. It's very interesting. I mean, when you think of the personality of Godhead, that's the personality of Godhead. And the affection of a mother to her son is, he's my son. Anyway, it's interesting. My dear Lord, you have already very scientifically described the symptoms of the total material nature. That was chapter 26, the details of Sankhya. You're starting with the undifferentiated totality of matter, and then how matter differentiates itself out in different elements, one by one, and elements and the sense and the object of the sense. It's very complex. How, you know, technology people really like that. And most of the rest of us find it bewildering. But it's detail. If you want to be a creator of the universe, you can study chapter 26 and you can learn how to do it. You've already very scientifically described the symptoms of the total material nature, this mahatattva, the Sanskrit term, and the characteristics of the spirit, according to the Sankhya system of philosophy. Now I shall request you to explain the path of devotional service, which is the ultimate end of all philosophical systems. Now Krishna says the same thing in Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavanmam prapadyate vasudev sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. That's the same thing. After many, 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 many births and deaths, pursuing knowledge as a jnani, one may, of course, one may not also, come to the position of surrendering to Krishna, taking up devotional service. And what's the impetus? Vasudev sarvamiti, Krishna is everything. Such a great soul is very rare. Samahatma sudurlabha. Question. To attain bhakti, is it a prerequisite that you have this knowledge and that knowledge and that knowledge and that knowledge and that knowledge, and you get so high in knowledge that eventually you come to bhakti? Yes or no? No. Why not? Bhakti is independent. So it doesn't matter how much you know. What is it? It's dependent upon having contact with one who has bhakti, and then that one who has bhakti passes on bhakti. And what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary is, all of this knowledge that he explained, Sankhya, chapter 26, chapter 27, particularly chapter 26, you can't understand it properly. Something will be understood, but you can't understand it properly without devotion. So she wants to know devotion so that she can understand it properly. And she's hearing from the right person. He's Kapiladeva. He understands all about devotion. Inquire about devotion from someone that isn't filled with devotion. You're not going to understand. You'll understand something else. And one has to go to the proper source. Then all of that Sankhya, just like it's in Bhagavad Gita, and just like it's here in Bhagavatam, then one can understand. So, bhakti is independent, meaning then, jnana or knowledge is dependent upon the independent. It's like a foundation for a house. You put the house on a foundation, not the other way around. Put the foundation on the house. You don't do that. Bhakti is independent. And again, the effect of again is dependent on bhakti. Prabhupada Prabhupada writes in the purports, nice things. Sankhya philosophy is the analytical study of all existence. One has to understand everything by examining its nature and characteristics. This is called acquirement of knowledge. But one should not simply acquire knowledge without reaching the goal of life or the basic principle for acquiring knowledge, bhakti yoga. If we give up bhakti yoga and simply busy ourselves in the analytical study of the nature of things as they are, then the result will be practically nil. Practically means the example, the common example is given is taking the chaff and thrashing the chaff after the wheat has already been removed. What benefit do you get by thrashing the chaff? Nothing, other than the labor of thrashing. You get some muscles or something. But the benefit, the profit, you know, the purpose of thrashing when the grain is there is to get the grain. And the grain gives then strength for the body. So bhakti is the purpose behind gyan, not the other way around. And actually, within bhakti, all knowledge is already there. That's taught earlier in the Bhagavatam. Within the realm of devotional service, one simply engages in devotional service causelessly, knowledge and detachment will arise. Nice verse. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojata Janayati Asho Vairagyam, detachment, Gyanam Cha Yad Ahaitakam, causelessly knowledge and detachment arise from devotional service. Next, Devahuti continued. So she's going to ask about some other categories besides unmixed devotion. My dear Lord, please also describe in detail, both for me and for people in general, the continual process of birth and death, for by hearing of such calamities, we may become detached from the activities of this material world. Now, in this chapter, and then a big, long chapter following this answers that question. Description of adverse fruit of activities. And it's, you know, if you want to get an impetus for devotional service, read that chapter. It's like, yikes, I don't want to go there. It's like another is the final, well, two more. The final chapter in Canto 5. This is Canto 3. The Canto 5 final chapter, description of the hellish planets. You get real fired up about devotional service, read that chapter. And this one is adverse fruit of activities. If I'm negligent in bhakti, then my activities will take me into the realm of fruitive activities, and it's mess. It's really messy. And there's another like super scary chapter, and that's the 12th canto that describes what happens at the end of the age of Kali. It's really yikes. It's really frightful. And that's where the train's going. If you don't get on the bhakti train, you get on the other one. Not like a third choice. So it's impetus. It's not compelling. You're not forced to engage in devotional service, but it's really, you know, with knowledge of, in the absence of bhakti, what happens? It helps to be serious about bhakti. Just want to appreciate a little bit, a little section from the 11th canto. This is Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. Uddhava Gita. And Krishna is describing the eligibility for someone for liberation, the eligibility for someone for elevation to the heavenly planets, and the eligibility for devotional service. It's really nice. It's really simple. It would make a lot of sense. Those who have who are primarily or substantially focused on detachment, they like liberation, moksha, and the impersonal kind of liberation. Those that are too much on the side of attachment, they like fruitive activities. So within the Vedas, there's a description of moksha and the description of fruitive activities and how to go forward in both of those paths. And for bhakti, it's really nice, not too much attachment, not too much aversion. For such a person, then the seed of bhakti can fructify nicely. Because if one is too much attached, I'm getting out of here, this place is awful, that kind of detachment. Engaging in devotional service is uncomfortable for such a person, because engagement in devotional service means that we do what we would normally do, except we do it for Krishna. I go to school, I go to work, I raise a family, I do whatever it is my propensity to do. I do those things, like Arjuna. Engage in his profession, his skill of giving protection. He's a kshatriya, so he should give protection. Even if it means someone is misbehaving so badly, according to the laws of Manu, they're to be punished in a severe way. The kshatriya needs to do that. Not just go around bashing people, but when there's violation of dharma, then according to the codes of dharma, they have to act. Because if they don't, who's going to protect the innocent people? So kshatriya. So, each of us, if there's too much detachment, devotional service is tough. I was in the Delhi airport some years ago, traveling to Hyderabad. And it was one of those mornings when the lines were triple long, just to check in your bag, then to go through security. I mean, it took nearly an hour to do those two things. Fortunately, it was winter. And what happens in winter in Delhi is there's fog in the morning, so the planes can't leave. So it worked out. It was like, you know, very difficult, just standing in line for an hour, two lines for an hour. And as I was checking in, there was a young man in front of me who kept looking over his shoulder like I was a guy from Mars or something. And so finally, when I got through, because he was ahead of me, we finally got through security. He had saved a seat for me on the other side and invited me to sit down. I never met the person before. And he said, "I can see from the way that you're dressed that you're, you know, a spiritual, you engage in some spiritual practices. Can you tell me? I'm very interested." So I shared. And then he asked the question, "Is it true?" I've heard that it's true. Is it true that if one is a householder, married, it's not possible for them to make any spiritual progress? They have to become renounced, otherwise they can't make any spiritual progress in this life. Is that true? I said, "I know where you heard that one." I said, "Shrinkari Math, right?" I said, "Yes." So I said, "Have you been to any ISKCON temples?" He said, "Yes." "And do you see that there's many families that go there?" "Yes." "Have you read Bhagavad Gita?" "Yes." "Do you know that Arjuna wasn't a renunciate? He didn't take sannyas. He was married. had multiple wives, and he was a warrior, and you know, he didn't go live in Sringeri Math, and did he make spiritual progress? So this is the message of bhakti. And just at that time, a devotee couple who I know, they passed through that ordeal of checking in their luggage and going through security, and they came, you know, and they saw me sitting there. So they came right up. You know, all the members of the family wearing tilak and with their bead bags paid their obeisances right in the airport. And I said, I think you need to talk with them. Because he had said he's married. And he's not like, so I have to abandon my wife so I can make spiritual progress. And I have to stop going to work so I can make spiritual progress. I have to stop my duties and, you know, the karma sannyas. So that's not what Krishna says. That's what Arjuna says. And Krishna says, no, not karma sannyas. Karma palatyag, renounce the fruits of your work and offer the fruits of your work to Krishna. That's what Krishna says. But, you know, here's a living example. He's married. Here's his wife. Here's his child. And they're making spiritual progress. Go ahead, spend some time talking with them. You'll see. So, too much affinity, or it's actually born of fear for detachment, leads to that kind, the seeking moksha, that kind of liberation. And then too much affinity for enjoyment, too much attachment, leads to fruitive activities. That's the next verse that's coming. And then, not too much on either side, that's a fertile ground. So there are many passages, including in this chapter and the next chapter, that's impetus for detachment. But the impetus for detachment leads to receiving the message of bhakti. Because that's what Devahuti's asked. And that way we can accept things that can be used in service to Krishna without accepting those things as the enjoyer of those things. We accept those things because they can be used in service to Krishna. And otherwise, we don't. Full stop. We don't. Anukul yasya sankalpa, pratikul yasya varjana. We accept those things that are favorable for bhakti. And we have a big smile and say no thank you for things that are not favorable to bhakti. Very simple. And then we can live in the world peacefully, without attachment, and without excessive detachment, excessive compulsive kind of detachment. We can be pleasantly peaceful, serving Krishna with our mind absorbed in Krishna. Exactly what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Perform your prescribed duty. Not give up your prescribed duty. Perform your prescribed duty and always think of me. You won't always think of Krishna if you're too much attached. You won't think of Krishna if you're too much detached. You'll think of Krishna if you're neither too much attached nor too much detached. So you're utilizing things in service to Krishna because, back to the very beginning, Krishna is the source of everything. He's the source of everything. He's the source of this body. He's the source of our intelligence. He's the source of matter. He's the source of spirit. He's the source of everything. So that's text 3. So she's asking, can you describe the path of birth and death? Because the calamities that take place during the sojourn of the soul in material existence, there's calamities. I mean, there's seemingly good fortune and there's misfortune in material existence. Then just two more. Text 4. She also wants to hear about eternal time. Fascinating subject. Please also describe eternal time, which is a representation of your form. And by whose influence people in general engage in the performance of pious activities. Of course, by the influence of time, people do other things besides engage in pious activities. But again, it's impetus, if one understands the temporary nature, at least in a limited way, if one understands the temporary nature of things, like, you know, my possessions or my wealth or my situation, it's here for some time and then it's gone. So that knowing the temporary nature of things leads to detachment, leads to a degree of detachment. But when that degree of detachment is not full, then I want a longer duration of happiness, heavenly position. So by the influence of eternal time, persons engage in pious activities for elevation to a higher position of enjoyment. That's what's being said by Devahuti, and stay tuned for Kapila Dev's response. It's that the subject of time is very fascinating. Prabhupada explains in the purport, everyone is aware that the time devours everything. The body, things connected to the body, etc., etc. So, it's not complete, but it's an impetus for detachment and attachment to a higher order of things. Ultimately, if the soul, this is very logical, many people aren't so logical, but there's some logic involved. If one is interested in a heavenly destination, what is it that goes to that heavenly destination? Well, you can say, well, it's me. But who's me? Then it's the soul. Oh, there's something that goes on beyond the temporary. That's me. So what's the ultimate situation of me? The lower modes are surpassed by higher modes, and then that's the doorway or window into transcendence. And then her last verse, text 5. My dear Lord, you are just like the sun, for you illuminate the darkness of the conditional life of the living entities, because their eyes of knowledge are not open. They are sleeping eternally in that darkness without your shelter, and therefore they are falsely engaged by the actions and reactions of their material activities, and they appear to be very fatigued. Now at the beginning, this is the beginning of chapter 29. In the beginning of chapter 25, she asks about herself. The circumstances, her good husband, Kardama Muni, after their son, Kapila Dev, was of age to look after his mother, he went back to the forest to engage in meditation. So she's been serving her husband for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, very happily. And now, for the purpose of setting example for society, renouncing family life and entering into the final stages of his life. So she's feeling separation from him due to her attachment, and she's asking her son how to overcome her attachment, her excessive attachment. So much so her mind is disturbed, and she said, I know these things, but I can't stabilize my mind. And I know that that's due to the illusory energy, but I also know that that illusory energy is your energy. So can you please withdraw it, so my mind can be more peaceful again? Now she's explicitly asking for the benefit of others. I'll read Prabhupada's purport, two paragraphs. It appears that Srimati Devahuti, the glorious mother of Lord Kapila Dev, is very compassionate for the regrettable condition of people in general who, not knowing the goal of life, are sleeping in the darkness of illusion. It is the general feeling of the Vaishnava, or devotee of the Lord, that he should awaken them. Similarly, Devahuti is requesting her glorious son to illuminate the lives of the conditioned souls so that their most regrettable conditional life may be ended. The Lord is described herein as Yoga Bhaskara, the son of the system of all yoga. Devahuti has already requested her glorious son to describe Bhakti Yoga. That was the first verse. And the Lord has described Bhakti Yoga as the ultimate yoga system. That was chapter 25. Then finally, Bhakti Yoga is the sun-like illumination for delivering the conditioned souls whose general condition is described here. They have no eyes to see their own interests. They do not know that the goal of life is not to increase material necessities of existence because the body will not exist more than a few years. The living beings are eternal and they have their eternal need. If one engages only in caring for the necessities of the body, not caring for the eternal necessities of life, then he is part of a civilization whose advancement puts the living entities in the darkest region of ignorance. Sleeping in that darkest region, one does not get any refreshment, but rather gradually becomes fatigued. He invents many processes to adjust this fatigued condition, but he fails and thus remains confused. The only path for mitigating his fatigue in the struggle for existence is the path of devotional service or the path of Krishna consciousness. Isn't it beautiful how Prabhupada writes? So beautiful. One of the practices that Prabhupada would do from time to time, as busy as his life was, he would ask his secretary just to read. He would sit there and he'd just read the Bhaktivedanta purports. And Prabhupada would sit there absorbed in hearing the Bhaktivedanta purports. And then on more than one occasion, Prabhupada commented, "These were written by Krishna. I was just the instrument." And then another occasion he said that people are interested in these books because they're written from the position of realization, as opposed to, he didn't add this part, I'm adding the part, as opposed to born from scholarship or speculation. Descending knowledge through a transparent medium whose heart is filled with devotion, the message is like nectar. And hearing the same topic discussed by a person who is not so situated, in my opinion and experience, it's like chewing sawdust. It's totally, you know, unpalatable. No juice. Very, very dry. And not at all satisfying to the intellect or to the heart. Okay, so any discussion? 7:35. Yes.
What is bhakti?
What is bhakti? Well, literally it means devotional service. Service with devotion to the Supreme. And there are different expressions of that, or limbs of that, nine in number. But the essence is rendering service to the source of everything with the feeling of love and devotion for that source, unto the Supreme, who is the source of everything. That's bhakti. So doing the things that we do with the consciousness behind the activity is the consciousness of devotion. This is an offering of love to the Supreme. My life, my words, my actions, my wealth, my intelligence, my thoughts are offered with devotion to the Supreme. Yes?
Isn't it a prerequisite to develop a bhakti?
No.
Because what my realization is without knowing who is the Supreme and who to develop on bhakti, if I don't have this knowledge, then even I see a lot of people, recently stayed at my house. They have bhakti, but they have on different.
But that's not bhakti. That's a sentiment, but it's not bhakti. So here's what Rupa Goswami expresses in Nectar Devotion or Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Like you may want to reach to a certain height, you may want to get a foothold in order to reach that certain height. But it's an intermediate. It's not a necessary prerequisite. One who doesn't have knowledge can attain bhakti. How do you? By association with one who has bhakti, one can attain bhakti. So using your example, by the association of those persons who you described, minus proper understanding, proper knowledge, then their sentiment is misguided or misdirected. Yes? So then that's the sentiment minus the subset of bhakti is knowledge. So what they need is bhakti, a subset of which is knowledge. Just like we study Bhagavad Gita, we're studying Srimad Bhagavatam. Certainly there's knowledge within those literatures, but it's knowledge in relation to devotion to Krishna, not just knowledge standing on its own. That's where the distinction comes. When we study Bhagavad Gita, it's not cultivation of knowledge, it's cultivation of bhakti. We read Srimad Bhagavatam, we're studying the teachings of Kapila, it's cultivation of devotion. The beginning, the middle, and the end, and throughout, it's cultivation of devotion. Although there's lots and lots and lots of knowledge. That lots of knowledge is to assist, just as you said, fixing our mind in the proper place, fixing our consciousness directed towards the Supreme, not something imaginary. Is that? Okay. Yes.
Practice of devotion service naturally leads to detachment. Now, being in a grihastha ashram and understanding about detachment in terms of detachment from worldly things, I see devotees develop that. My question is, practicing devotion service, we observe that devotees make very nice relationships with each other, very caring, loving. Now, does it also mean that detachment comes even from those loving exchanges?
Any kind of material interaction, the senses and objects, until we're pure, there's going to be attachment on the material side until we're pure. The good news with devotional service and loving relationships is the medium is devotional service, and therefore that means bhakti is there, and bhakti is as pure as Krishna is, supremely pure. So the tendency for material attachment is reduced, and as one's devotion becomes stronger and stronger and stronger, that's all that's left, is transcendental attachment. Just like, here's a nice example, Queen Kunti's prayers, you're familiar? Chapter 8 of Canto 1. She is very attached to Krishna. But she's a mother, so she's very attached to her sons. And she's a daughter, she's very attached to her father and her father's family. So she prays to Krishna, the Supreme Pure, I'm paraphrasing, please take away the material portion of my attachment for my sons and my attachment for my father and his family. Because his father, her father, is in Dwarka and her sons are in Hastinapur. And Krishna is just about to leave Hastinapur to go back to Dwarka. So she's feeling, I'll miss your association, and my sons will miss your association. It'll be hard to be peaceful without you. But then when you go to Dwarka, they're feeling unpeaceful without you, and when you go back, then they'll be very happy. So they'll be happy and we'll be not happy. And it's just tearing me apart, this, you know, attachment for this, attachment for that. So please take away the material portion of my attachment. So it's only this, it's only spiritual. So through the medium of bhakti, those attachments and those loving relationships become, can become, the potency is there for them to become completely spiritual. And then there is such a thing, in fact it's the goal, is pure spiritual attachment. Now when there's pure spiritual attachment, sometimes, say for example, one becomes attached to Krishna. And then, like the residents of Vrindavan, when Krishna goes to the forest with the cowherd boys, for a whole day, they're feeling great separation from Krishna. But the cowherd boys are having a blast. And the cows, they go, like, whoopee. And then when they come home, the cowherd cowherd boys have to go to their home. The cows go to the goshal, and Krishna goes, takes his bath and has his evening meal. And the cows are going, moo, we want to be with Krishna. And the cowherd boys, they can't sleep at night. They want to be with, they can't wait till the next morning they can be with Krishna again. So there's transcendental attachment. This material attachment is the perverted reflection of that one. And in the perverted reflection, not only we don't know the right person, we think the covering is the person instead of the person is the person. But we also, we're at the center instead of Krishna at the center. So the life of happiness where Krishna is at the center, that's transcendental. And there's attachment. Transcendental attachment. So, back to your question, the loving relationships that we experience in devotional service, it's on the way to unalloyed spiritual attachment. In between, there's a mix, because our consciousness is not pure yet, it's mixed. Some affinity for matter, some affinity for Krishna, in different proportions. And therefore, while we are engaging in our activities with one another, we should be striving for purity. Then we can be a better friend, or a better husband, or a better wife, or a better son or daughter, or whatever it is. Better community member. I can be of a better service unto others when my consciousness becomes pure. Yeah? Someone else? Yes?
I think you answered it, but anyway, let me put it out. Prabhu's already asked that. I got the importance of attachment and detachment towards devotional service. But in practical life, oftentimes what happens is, even though in the thick of things, you wanted to be detached or you wanted to be thinking about Krishna, you jump in because of either your ego, or because of your dual mentality, you put things off when you are in a situation, either in personal life or at work. You don't bring in all the attachment concept, and then you jump in and then you do a dual mentality. Even though you know it's humility is important, a lot of factors.
Sure.
But how do I overcome that? I know it's going to take time. But is there any sutra or mantra which will help you?
Sutra, mantra.
Help to make the progress a little bit more.
Avyasa yoga yoktena. A phrase that I heard Prabhupada say over and over, and because he said it over and over, it to me it meant he wants us to understand it, so he's saying it over and over. And the phrase, this is the sutra, by practice, something becomes second nature. By practice. So we have our nature. The nature is the attachment nature and the ego nature and the contamination. That's it. That's the diseased nature. But by practice, and practice and practice and practice, if you practice abhyasa yoga yuktena, that becomes second nature, and the second nature displaces the conditioned one. So the reality is purity is our real nature. That's reality. And the contamination is the diseased condition. It's not our real nature. And we're hankering for the healthy state. We wish to go beyond the unhealthy state. So go to a good physician when you have a health problem, and listen carefully to the recommendation. Here's your medicine, here's your diet, do these things, don't do those things. You'll get healthy. So abhyasa, it's the cultivation with faith, and with faith means there's some proper regard for the doctor, and faith because of faith in the doctor, faith in the medicine, and faith in the remedy, and so then I practice that, and then second nature becomes your nature, and actually it's our original nature, it's not just second nature, but by practice something becomes. Takes the place of the unwholesome. So we're forgetful, like you say, and we fall into patches of darkness and lamentation and bewilderment and those things. Turn on the light again. Yes. Can you hear back there? Okay.
So, when we're doing all the things in service to Krishna, but still, if at all I'm not able to spend proper time on reading and hearing, then the heart will not get satisfied, even though everything is done in the form, and I'm taking care of everything and all the services. But
what does that mean? Am I not really being in other service, doing all the things? Well, there's not a yes or no answer to that. At some times it's a yes, and sometimes it's a no. So, then it's maybe. There's always room for improvement in a life of devotion and in life in general. There's always room for improvement. So, circumstances sometimes become more demanding of our time than other times. And so, I was having this discussion with Jai Dwaita Maharaj. And the essence of that discussion on the reading topic was some persons are very disciplined, and they can read, for a certain amount every day. No matter what, they just read a certain amount every day. read and hear recorded classes a certain amount every day. They're just very disciplined. Others read, you know, a substantial amount once a week. Others do a very substantial periodically. It's just like, you know, the wave subsides and their attention goes not to waiting for the next wave, but for, you know, the nurturing of hearing and chanting. So his message to me was, whether it's this, that, or the other, whatever the combination is, the most important thing is that there's regular hearing and chanting. In Prabhupada's language, it's nityam bhagavata sevaya. It's regularly. Nityam actually means always, but regularly. So regularly, commonly, let's say for our temple resident devotees, it's every day. Every day, every day, every day, every day, every day. That's, you know, the temple regulation. It's one of the values of temple life for our young brahmacharis. They have that great facility. It's every day. And then, you know, grihasthas who have had that training, it becomes easier. And then those who haven't had that training, there's the demands of life, and sometimes, you know, that circumstances are difficult to do that every day. For some find it like that. But if the commitment is there, it becomes, the door opens. Conversely, when there isn't commitment, you can't even find the door. What to speak of, it's not open. So commitment helps enormously. Still, let's just say, from my temple experience, when it's Ratha-yatra time, it's a full court press. That's a sports term. Means, you have to attend to the necessities of the Ratha-yatra festival. So that means either before or after or both, there's some time set aside for extra reading and hearing. Because when it's Ratha-yatra time, or somebody in their workplace, when, you know, from what I've heard anyways, when there's a project deadline, it's, you know, it's a full court press. It's like, you know, everything else goes out the window, and you just make sure that the task, that the thing, the project is ready to launch. And then, you know, depends on the employer. They may have like five other projects waiting as soon as that one's done to pile on you. But best that there's some before and or after time in anticipation of those waves, tsunamis of demands. But if there is, so it takes determination. Even when those like special circumstances come, to stay fixed. And if it's just the day to day and there's trouble, then maintaining regular hearing, then you need to recalibrate where your priorities are. If it's just like incessant, non-stop, I never have time. So I'm not asking you to state, you know, where you are in that broad spectrum of things. Just in a general response. If there, where there's a strong desire, Krishna will help you. And if things become too much regular, then you need to do a reset on where are your priorities, how are you using your time, time management, you know, effectiveness in what you do. So that there is time, because it's important. Your question was, does that mean I'm not doing things in the mood of service, in advance? Something else? Yes? One student?
From George Mason.
From George Mason?
Yes. He asked me one question. he was introduced to Krishna consciousness in Hyderabad. He used to go to the temple. So now he came here, and then he never attended any program. Somehow he came to know that there is a pure program. And then this was his last semester, and he graduated now. So meanwhile, what he did is he introduced like 7 students he brought. And they all got the internships. And he is not getting a job. So his question was like, I'm chanting extra, and I'm hearing and I'm reading, but I'm not getting a job. And I am.
What's wrong with Krishna? I'm doing my part, he's not doing his part. What's wrong?
So what I feel is like the mix. There is something for you, Krishna, something for me. But how shall I address him? I say, please continue, and he's like a gentle, like, to jump the wall. So I want to be sensitive, but I want to do this.
Depends on the person, yeah. How you would speak to that person. Given what you've said so far, here's a person who has a mix, and one of the things that's happening in his life is, you know, one half of the mix is being unfulfilled, so he's got his hands on his hips saying, what's going on here? So depending upon the person, perhaps you can help him understand what's the message. Krishna is helping you become detached from the mix. You don't want to be detached from the mix, but Krishna is helping you anyways. So you can just get angry with Krishna, or you can learn the lesson that Krishna would like you to learn. And if you don't learn the lesson that Krishna would like you to learn, you'll get another opportunity of the same thing, and another opportunity of the same thing, and it'll keep repeating itself until the light goes on and says, I think that Krishna wants me to learn a lesson. So if you'd like the repeat, 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 you know, that's an option for you to select. And otherwise, you can learn the lesson. And not just cosmetically say, okay, Krishna, whatever you want, but, you know, actually from your heart say, okay, Krishna, whatever you want. Because what Krishna wants is your heart. He doesn't want your conditional. Krishna is being kind to you. He's being less kind to the others and more kind to you. Because they're going on with the mixed program. Oh, I did this, now I got that. So it's a good program. I like Krishna. And Krishna didn't give me what I want. Now being given an opportunity for unmixed. Now, what do you say to Krishna about that when he gives you that opportunity? Why don't you think of it some thought? What are you going to say to Krishna? He's the supreme controller. He can give you 500 jobs. Or he can give you no jobs. He's the big boss. Now, what's your relationship with him? Is he the order supplier, or is your relationship something else? You know, you're gonna carry on anyway, whether it's this situation, that situation, other situation. So really, what's your relationship with Krishna? You're very fortunate. Krishna is being very kind to you. He's asking you that question. What's your answer? Not to me, you know, to him. What's your answer to Krishna? Yes?
Continuing with the same question.
Same question? You have the same person?
No.
No.
So, in the thought that comes is when from the student's part that if he is not able to find a job, is it because of his past reaction?
It can be so many things. There's no one answer. Okay. It depends on each person. Different. Someone else? Yes.
I had a question on so recently I was hearing about how some of the senior disciples of Prabhupada, after Prabhupada's disappearance, they, you know, went a little, you know, crazy, some left the movement, like did a lot of things that are not particularly Krishna conscious.
Yeah.
And kind of goes back to, like, you know, like there's danger at every step, and it kind of, it's a little unsettling to me, especially like when I hear about these very, you know, very senior devotees who, you know, gave their life and then all of a sudden just went the other direction. And for me, you know, I'm starting out here and it's very unsettling and it makes me really uncomfortable. So I don't, how do I deal with that? It's
just
really fearful.
Well, it's kind of like one main question, but there's two questions within the one question. Like, one is, how do I avoid that happening to me? And then the other is, how do I deal with the feeling that that happened to other people? If it's unsettling for you, imagine what it was like for someone who was around when that happened. And you know, there goes this one, there goes that one. There were persons, so how it happened, this is my understanding, not like, you know, for everybody, but in a broad sense, a generalization sense, Prabhupada's association was so wonderful that in his association one was lifted and felt empowered and could do anything. And it was dependent upon his physical presence, and in his physical absence, that strength was gone. That sense of, you know, they couldn't carry on without his physical presence. So I understood what that meant was that more important than physical presence is the instruction. Being attached to the instruction is attached to the person. And some persons were less attached to the instruction and more attached to the physical presence. And in his physical presence there was power and strength. And that was what they were feeding off of. And when that was taken away, the physical presence part, the instruction wasn't there before. And so, you know, they hit the eject button. The connection was not continuing. Sentiment in the good old days kind of sentiment lingered, but you know, now that's my understanding of why it happens. And then the prevention is, let me not just be dependent upon the physical presence, but the instructions. Let me make the instructions my life. And then physical presence or not physical presence. Turn it around the other way, your question, and you know, how is it? See, 1977. So, 23 years plus 13 years is 38 years. I haven't had the physical association of Prabhupada for those many years. How is it possible to continue? And not kind of like ho-hum, but you know, very strong absorption in serving Prabhupada. How is it possible? Is that based on physical presence? Based on instruction, that and the medium of association is strongest there. So that's where, you know, the lesson, the practical lesson for yourself is, let my attachment go there. Let me cultivate that kind of attachment. And then as far as the feelings are concerned, the unsettled feeling is, let me learn from that which others have done so I don't go down the same path. And then, like, another very nice thing, I mean, it's an antidote, it's ointment for the unsettled feeling, or like a balm, a soothing message. Prabhupada understood explicitly. I was sitting in a class when he said, not everybody who's practicing devotional service will be here tomorrow. Like, you know, looking around, you know. I was thinking, you know, who's going to be around tomorrow? So, but he said, that's okay, because it's eternal benefit. All those persons that did in Prabhupada's physical presence and then in his physical absence, they went away and did non-devotional things with their life, to their eternal benefit. To their eternal benefit. Could you lean that way so I can see? There we go. Thanks. Good. Thanks. So those persons are eternally benefited by the kindness of our founder Acharya. He extended his life, it touched their lives, they're eternally benefited. That's his mercy. They fortunately they received mercy. Unfortunately, they didn't receive mercy in a way that they could sustain receiving his mercy. That's misfortune. But unlimited good fortune has come into their life. And they'll never be the same. That's from Narada Muni to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Their life will never be the same. Even they go off and do foolish things that they will not be able to forget. Even they may try to forget. They cannot forget. Their life is permanently different, eternally. Now back to what the lesson for yourself is, and ourselves. Let us develop affinity, shelter and attachment for the instructions that we receive. And that way we can associate eternally. Two questions for you then. Go ahead. Yes. Hare Krishna.
This is my first time hearing you, you know, face to face in your personal association. I have a question. As you said in your talk today, that it's to cultivate bhakti, it is important that you have association with these. And by doing association of sadhu and devotees, you eventually, you know, cultivate more bhakti and reach the pure bhakti stage. But what if, you know, you have the desire to do, you know, service and association of devotees, but if your family is not supportive, then how do you suggest what's the right path to go?
Well, internally and externally. Internally, with faith in Krishna, Krishna is all pure. And by contact with the all pure, one's heart becomes pure. With faith in that principle, then let me carry on in a way that's not going to be disturbing in the family scene. That means I may have to cultivate my bhakti internally with faith that by my contacting Krishna, the Supreme Pure, my heart will become pure, and just by my heart being pure, that will have its effect, uplifting and purifying effect on the family, rather than, you know, pushing. It just will come about in a natural way that family members will get that benefit, because that's my position. I'm a servant, and as a wife or mother, my position is to serve my husband and my children. So if the circumstance calls for my serving my wife, my husband or my children this way, I'll do it this way, or that way, I'll do it that way. And so inward cultivation without doing or speaking or carrying on in those ways that it's disturbance to the other family members, with faith that that is going to be the best service I can do. And gradually by that purification of heart, it'll have its impact, spiritual impact. The not so favorable inquest of time will become at least supportive, if not, you know, participatory. The opportunity for that to happen is most likely to happen by the inward cultivation of bhakti. So that means I then, practically speaking in terms of services, I may not be able to do all the services I would otherwise like to do in a more supportive atmosphere. So I cultivate inwardly. That's just the circumstance.
Well, you know, you
something like this particular juncture depends on the family, but supposing it is in fact, if you were to cook with devotion but then offer to Krishna, it's going to make a disturbance. I mean, then make the offering in your mind. But at a certain point, making the offering is not going to be a disturbance, and then you make the offering in a formal way, with faith in Krishna. I can imagine, let's put it this way. One of the places I visit is China. And the opposition from men in China to bhakti in the home, I'm predictably is stronger than the opposition of Indian men to presence of bhakti in the home. It's far more challenging. Count your blessings. You're here, you know. Some of them can't even attend gatherings to hear. So, the circumstance is your circumstance, and you accept, Krishna, you've given me this opportunity to serve you in this particular way. Please give me the intelligence and the patience and the conviction and the strength of devotion to carry on in such a way that in this particular circumstance my family members can be served nicely. And by your mercy, they will progressively make steps of advancement towards you. Let me be that instrument of you. So, yes, you may be not doing something. You, according to circumstance, as best you can. That's part of the internal. In your mind, you make the offering, and etc. Last question.
Maharaj, you shared about Srila Prabhupada quickly when you heard from him directly when he was here. Can you share something which really touched when he was here personally to you?
I'll do one, and then I'm going to end. But it's in relation to her question about Vani and Vapu. So, one of the opportunities occasions that I had to associate with Srila Prabhupada was morning walks. Basically, there's three categories. In classes, on morning walks, and on occasion in his quarters. But most of the time I was just busy in devotional service, carrying out his instructions. So, one time, we were in Vrindavan, and have you been to the Radhakrishna, our temple, Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan? So, when that temple was built, wasn't all that development all over the place. It was just agricultural fields, practically in all directions. A little bit to the left, there was that, you know, institute, the library thing. But otherwise, it was just agricultural fields. So, when it was time for Prabhupada's morning walk, he would go from his quarters, around, out the front gate, and turn right. And then that arch wasn't there, and you know, just, it was fields. So then he would walk some distance. Generally, there was a forested area. He liked the forested area, walked around the forested area, and came back. And as we were coming back one morning, he would come back in time for greeting the deities at 7. So it was, you know, some 10 minutes before 7. And at a distance, we could hear the kirtan, the devotees at the gate having kirtan. And Prabhupada heard the kirtan and said, looked around and said, "Where are all the devotees?" And, well, you know, they're over there having kirtan, Prabhupada. Someone said, "Why are they not taking the opportunity to associate with their spiritual master, Vapu?" Then he put his cane down and said, "When there's opportunity to physically associate with the spiritual master, one should take advantage." And then, you know, looked around, make sure we got it. And then he said, "And when there is that Vapu, there is also Vani. One hears the instructions from the spiritual master." Let that sink in. Then he said, "Between the two, Vani is more important." And then he went on to say, "When there isn't the physical association, one should also receive Vani association from the spiritual master." Then he circled around back to the first one, saying, "But when there is opportunity for physical association, one should take that opportunity." They looked around and made sure it registered, and then went on. And Srila Prabhupada, in his own life with his spiritual master, was like that. He was a householder. He had multiple children. He had a business. So he was interested in serving the mission as a householder. He gave funds from his earnings. He engaged in literary work, writing articles for their publications. He was involved directly in a compilation of scriptural verses to complement the message of surrender, Sharanagati. I know that because I studied the subject one time. Prabhupada was the compiler of scriptural quotes that somebody else took the credit for on the principles of surrender. So he was assisting the mission according to his, you know, position. But he couldn't so easily be available for his spiritual master's service. And, you know, occasion for him speaking. But from time to time, he did. Took leave from his work and went and got his association. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.